The prospects for the leadership of the National Party on Sunday morning, RNZ National, after that disastrous imbroglio this past week. Joining us is political journalist Richard Harman, the man behind the TV current affairs shows Agenda and The Nation, and now he runs the Politic website. Morena, Richard.
Morena, Jim.
Thanks for joining us. I suppose I have to start by asking you, because half of New Zealand seems to have provided us with their opinions, what on earth went on in Judith Collins's head. She said, after all, she knew that going after Simon Bridges might bring her down.
Well, I think you've got to look at the classic dirty politics playbook here. She had this information about Simon Bridges for a number of days, if not weeks, beforehand. She also knew that the matter had been resolved to Jackie Dean's satisfaction. She stored it away, and she must have thought that Simon Bridges was about to mount a challenge. And so she decided to cut him off at the pass using the information she had.
A strange rush of blood, though. Yeah, that is certainly one interpretation. Almost as if everything got too much, though, because she did hint at the pressure as she left.
Well, there was clearly pressure. There always is for the leader of the opposition. It's a thankless task. But this was something quite extraordinary. I think we've seen, you know, what we've seen of Judith Collins over the years is that she plays for keeps. She's not out of the kindness end of politics.
The Jackie Dean version, as I understand it, is that she raised the issue again in conversation. Judith Collins got wind of it. Simon Bridges balked at meeting her or Shane Retty over it. If that's the right account, should he have? He saw potential in not acquiescing. How do you analyse this?
Well, I mean, one account is that he said she can get stuffed. I think that was probably the right response. He knew that the issue had been resolved. He knew that Dean was comfortable because she'd voted for him twice after the incident had happened. And Collins, don't forget, a few days ago had said Simon Bridges will never ever be the leader of the National Party. He knew she was gunning for him. That's quite a common response, I think, between rivals in politics, that, you know, when you sense you're being confronted, you don't, you know, buy the bait.
The National Party board authorised the seeking of further information from the parties involved, but the information was known, wasn't it? I mean, all the information seems to have been known. Could Peter Goodfellow have headed this off at the pass?
Of course he could have. What exactly the board said to Collins, we don't know, because there are two versions. There is her version, which is that the board unanimously approved her disciplining Bridges, and then there's the board's more complex version, in which they said natural justice needed to be taken into account. I suspect that the truth is somewhere in the middle, that the board said, go away and do what you need to do. But there is a clear division in the National Party between the caucus and the board, and it is the caucus leader's responsibility to manage the caucus. It's not the board's.
What will the National Party want Judith Collins to do now, Richard?
I think a large number of MPs, I'm not sure about the party, but a large number of MPs will want her out of the caucus. I think that a large number of them will also want her out of Parliament. Remember, she's the first New Zealand political party leader, major political party leader, to have a successful vote of no confidence passed in them, certainly since the Second World War, and I would think stretching back before that.
Everyone's been framing this episode by and large in terms of political strategy, but there is the important issue which our listeners are reminding us of this morning, which is that Parliament has enunciated itself in regard to standing up for the rights of women not to be offended in Parliament, as Jackie Dean was, albeit 5 years ago. Could Judith Collins legitimately have martyr status now, or is the swirl of motives too unclear?
Well, she'll be an interesting feminist martyr, given that a few weeks ago she called Susie Wiles a big fat hypocrite.
Do you think she's relieved, like she says?
No.
you think we may see, oh, you're giving me the opportunity to ask lots of questions, Richard. You think we may see a new leader even before Tuesday, or at least decided before Tuesday? Why?
Because I think the bulk of the caucus want that, and I think a lot in the party want that. What they don't want is a divisive election in the caucus, which in which they get a new leader with only a narrow majority. And they all know that neither Bridges nor Luxon at this stage has an overwhelming majority. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, one of them said to me, look, neither has a conclusive number. And what they will want is one candidate going into that election on Tuesday. And so that's what they're going to have to try and settle today and tomorrow.
All right, so it may be a brokered decision, as they say, rather than a straight caucus decision. Explain how that works today or tomorrow.
Well, if you look back to 2006, when John Key took over the leadership from Don Brash, you may recall they spent the weekend, I think it was in John Key's house. There was Key, English, Brash, I think Murray McCulley, and other party heavyweights coming and going. I think Judy Kirk was possibly involved. And they came up with a deal whereby Gerry Brownlee stood down as deputy leader to allow Bill English, who was Key's rival for the leadership, to become the deputy leader and finance spokesperson. And I think a lot of them will look back on that and say, well, that worked. And that may be a really good model to sort this one out, rather than have these situations where they go in to a caucus and they've got the two contenders campaigning against each other and the winner gets there with a margin of 3 or 4 votes. That's just a recipe for further disunity.
Okay, well, we'll know by Tuesday. Who will emerge victorious, please?
Well, it's a bit like a quinella, really, isn't it? I mean, it'll be Bridges or Luxon. And I just wonder whether the person who it's not becomes the deputy, that they dispense with the male-female idea, and instead they're able to say, well, we've got Pākehā Māori. So I think it's possible for them, for either Bridges or Luxon to be the leader and either Bridges or Luxon to be the deputy.
Would that be a slightly odd quinella?
Well, I think there are risks with Luxon. There are huge risks. We don't really know very much about him. He hasn't been tested. And whereas we know a lot about Simon Bridges and a lot more since he wrote his book, and he's also been tested. And he said, and I think there's quite a lot of people who accept this, that he's learned and matured a lot. But whether he's learned and matured enough is the question. And, of course, the people that look at Luxon say, well, here's a fresh start, a real fresh start. And, of course, there's a hint of John Key about him.
He would have a good year to get a handle on the job and behave in a sort of statesmanlike, in inverted commas, way that obviates any concerns about his religion or his inexperience. He's surely smart enough for that. He would, I'll talk about Simon Bridges too, but Luxon would run it like an executive. And can you argue that that kind of worked for Bill English?
Well, but Bill English was a politician to his fingertips. Bill English had been in the National Party. Bill English's mother was a major figure in the National Party. He'd been brought up in the party. He had been in Parliament. Remember, he was part of the Brat Pack who came in 1990. So he'd been in Parliament, 18 years before he became Finance Minister.
Okay, there's the difference. As far as Simon Bridges goes, it's been characterised, though, in riposte to what you said before, as the step back, not the step forward. And this is probably an issue?
I suspect it is, but back to what? In front, you could argue. Bridges stood right back when he first stood for the leadership, when he won it, as being the next generational candidate. He was not promising the fourth term of the Key government. And I think if you look into his book, which is a fascinating read, he emerges out of it as someone with quite a different agenda to what traditionally we've been hearing from the National Party. Sure, he's a conservative, and He's a conservative on economic issues as well. But he's also interested in sort of race identity issues and all that kind stuff. Of
thing. Got to go, Richard. Pardon me for doing so.